Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over the green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.
Hello again, we're back in Solartopia. We are looking forward to another hour here. We're going to talk about a very, very important issue with Kathy Neer, a great, great guest. We're very honored to have her. I do want to announce that our immigration policy in Solartopia does allow for immigrants, including people who are of the Muslim faith and any other faith you might want to have. So we are open for business here in Solartopia, and today's hour is going to be devoted entirely to women's rights and to the assault that has been occurring, well, the most recent one that occurred in Planned Parenthood, and all the assaults on abortion clinics and women's health clinics by law and with guns. I mean, it's a terrible statement on our country's state of being at this point in time that in between the time I booked this show, we were everywhere, the whole country, of course, the world, horrified by the latest gun violence, armed assault on a women's health clinic. And, of course, in between, we have had another mass slaughter, I guess the monthly mass slaughter here in this country, because we can't seem to get it together to have gun control. And of course, now Donald Trump mimicking Adolf Hitler and talking about not allowing Muslims into the country. I did have the misfortune to see him on TV lately, recently, and telling everybody how much he loves Muslims, and he has Muslim business partners. I mean, come on. Where are we at here in this country? There are 8 million Muslims in the United States. There are more Muslims in the United States than there are Jews, by the way, and a billion and a half or so Muslims around the world. And he is, well, we'll get into that. We're here with Kathy Neer. Kathy, are you with us?
Yes, Harvey, I am. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, you're an honored guest, and I set aside the whole hour. I realize if you have to run, that's fine, but this is an issue that, you know, I want to go into in depth, and you will have a URL from this show which you can distribute once we're done, and people do that a lot. I think that more people listen that way than any other. And so I do want to go into this in great depth. If you can stay with us the whole hour, that's fine. If you can't, you let us know. But I have five daughters and now three granddaughters. And this is an issue that cuts to the core of our existence in this country. And, you know, if you don't mind, will you recollect for us, please, the most recent armed attack on a women's health clinic? I saw pictures of the victims, including, you know, it's mind-boggling in this country, these guys, these people, crazy people with guns who should absolutely not have guns, attack a clinic, and the first person killed is this very nice looking young guy, a family man, a security guard. And but if you can talk to us a bit about the state of siege, and also, if you will, please, I make a policy. I generally don't introduce my guests. I prefer to have my guests really explain who they are. So, Kathy, will you tell us who you are and what you really want people to know about you, and then we'll talk about this. Just jump right in and talk about the assault on the Planned Parenthood clinics.
Right. Well, thank you, Harvey, and hello to all of you. My name is Kathy Kinnear. It's K-N-E-E-R, and I'm the president CEO for Planned Parenthood Affiliates of California, and our office is the state public policy office for the seven local Planned Parenthood affiliates. And together, those affiliates provide reproductive health services and primary care services in 105 health centers throughout California. And for many of our patients, we are their only source of health care. And we've been providing health care, some of our affiliates, for 50 to 60 years. My office was the first public policy office established for 40 years ago. Because we've long recognized that government has the power and the money to influence how healthcare dollars are spent, how what people can pay even on their own for accessing reproductive healthcare services. So we've had a long commitment of advocacy. And I've been doing my job here at Planned Parenthood for 23 years, and prior to that I worked in maternal and child health for the March of Dimes for 18 years.
Wow, good for you.
California. So I have a lot of
expertise. So you're in Sacramento?
In Sacramento, yes. I'm at the Capitol. So I have a lot of expertise in women and maternal child health. And I feel passionately that this year, this unprecedented attack on access to basic contraceptive services. I mean, we're not even, they're attacking us now over contraception. They've tried to shift from abortion to contraception.
It's astonishing.
Congress, yes, but driven by anti-choice activists. And it's important for our listeners to know that these threats are very real. You've heard about all over the mid part of the country, the South and the Midwest, these anti-choice legislature and governors have been cutting off funding for Planned Parenthood for some time, restricting funding for abortion, not expanding Medicaid coverage for women and their families under the Affordable Care Act. There's a very concerted movement to keep women isolated and their families from accessing their very basic health care. And it's working. It's happening.
Kathy Kinnear, let's back up one moment. You are the head of the Planned Parenthood in California.
Right.
And in passing, you said that you run more than 100 clinics in California.
Yes.
Is that the case?
Yes. Our seven affiliates operate a little over 105 health centers. We just opened a new health center in West Hollywood on December 1st that we were proud to open, particularly in light of the attack in Colorado Springs. We think it's important to tell the country that we are still here on the job. They're not going to scare us, intimidate us. Well, they do scare and intimidate some, but by and large, we're resilient, and we are going to continue to not just defend what we have, but to find areas that we can expand. And we've been able to do that in California, obviously, because we're basically, I call ourselves the number one pro-choice state. And we've been able to expand access to reproductive health care. But I know that's not the case for states all around the country, in the mid part of the country. So there's a lot at stake coming up with this election. And I think these most recent attacks by the Center for Medical Progress trying to find a way to make sure we get defunded before the next election, because they don't want us to be politically effective. And I think they've miscalculated our resolve. And they've miscalculated, I think, you know, every day 3 million women, or every year 3 million women, 1 in 5 visit a health center for reproductive health care. And over a lifetime, don't forget the care they receive. So when they hear some of this misinformation about how we provide services or what we do provide, it doesn't resonate. And so I have faith that, you know, American women and their families, men too, because men have wives, daughters, as you pointed out, and granddaughters that you care about. But it's all coming to a head around this election. There's so much at stake, not just at the national level, but where states have statewide elections. It's really critical that we get control back of Congress. You know, we lost the House prior to the Senate, but the last election that kept Mitch McConnell in has really been a game changer, because that means for the first time they can pass anti-choice defunding bills, put it on the president's desk, and thank goodness the president has stood firm in his commitment to services for women, and he has promised to veto. You know, there have been 19 votes just this year on defunding Planned Parenthood or defunding services. And for the first time, we'll have a bill go to the president's desk that he will have to veto since the Bill Clinton administration. So there have been 47 antitrust bills introduced at Congress. We've had four hearings. Five committees have launched an investigation into Planned Parenthood. We have fully complied with their requests for data. The challenge for us is that they've asked for basically everything, all of our data, including patient data and staff data, and we continue to not provide our staff data or our patient data. We'll defend that to the very end because we think that's none of government's business to know who comes to our health centers and the names of our staff because they do get targeted by these anti-choice extremists.
It's staggering.
I do want to talk a little bit about these fetal tissue. What's this all about? Because this is really...
Wait, Kathy, before you proceed, I want to get a couple of numbers on the table. You have seven affiliates in California.
Yes.
You run over 100 health centers.
Yes.
How many employees does Planned Parenthood and their affiliates have in California?
Oh, you would ask me that, and I honestly don't know that number.
Just
deal with the government policy.
Do you know how many women you treat?
Obviously, to run a health center under California law, there's quite a few health professionals that we hire, as well as our support staff. We also have education. We're in the schools providing comprehensive sex ed in school districts that understand the importance of making sure students know how to protect themselves against STDs and pregnancy, and how to plan and have a healthy raise a healthy family if that's their choice.
Do you have any community education
projects. We work with foster youth in some areas. We work with at-risk gang youth. So we have a lot of other programs that happen at the local level where we have communities that recognize how important it is to invest in prevention with our youth today.
It is staggering to me that there are people in this country who oppose, who say they hate abortion. They have all this rhetoric, which I'm not even going to begin to repeat, about abortion. And then they turn around and they want to deny contraception, and they fight against sex education. You know, my understanding is Colorado, which has been very aggressive in promoting sex education and passing out contraceptives, has dropped the abortion rate in Colorado by more than 40%, and also has cut down on teen pregnancy by 40%.
And I will say, Harvey, they were able to put that comprehensive program together through a grant that's now subsequently expired, and the state is not going to pick up that demonstration project and implement it statewide. That drop in teen pregnancy, that has been happening all across the country. California, we had a higher than the national average of teen pregnancies when Republican Governor Pete Wilson took office. And Pete Wilson was pro-choice. He put together a comprehensive program, and this goes back to the early 90s, for reducing teen and unintended pregnancy, because adults also have unintended pregnancies, so I don't want to just single out teens. Teens actually mirror adults when it comes to planning for pregnancy. But teens need a different set of interventions. And he recognized it's not just giving them access to health care. Of course, they have to know how to get access to birth control. But he recognized the importance of community groups coming together, working with teens, creating mentor programs for young men. Because remember, it takes two for a pregnancy, not just one, and making sure they had a public media campaign. He put together this comprehensive teen and unintended pregnancy prevention. We led the nation in dropping teen pregnancy rates in California. And so that's now been mimicked in other areas where they can come up with the funding. But sadly, there are many states where that doesn't happen. And Colorado was happy, and they have evidence. They have data to prove comprehensive sex ed, comprehensive access to reproductive health care, really is the way to reduce the need for abortion. How simple is that? But apparently not simple enough for our opponents because they're not interested in that. And they've actively, we've seen what came out of the Affordable Care Act and the attack on, we understand religious organizations have a right to practice and follow their religious beliefs. But when you take a private corporation that maybe is controlled by individuals such as the Hobby Lobby, their employees didn't sign up to work for a religious organization. They signed up for a job and may have been the only job available to them. And they're now effectively denied certain types of contraception because their employers don't agree with it. To me, that was a very scary day across America when we could have employers say that I don't care what your physical, mental health needs are, not mental health, but your desire to have contraception so you can plan when and whether to have your family. I don't care. My beliefs trump yours. And now we see all of these ways they're trying to undermine the provision of contraception. And, you know, it's the exact opposite of what we should be doing in America. The exact opposite. So,
Can you explain in any way, shape, or form why people are against contraception?
Well, I can explain it from, you know, there are religious organizations, the Catholic Church. I respect their views on whether they believe certain forms of contraception are, in fact, an abortifacient based on their religious beliefs. I only look at contraception from a medical perspective. And so methods of contraception, because they prevent implantation of a fertilized egg, that isn't a abortion. So in our view of it in the medical world, because for there to be an abortion, there has to be a pregnancy. So we have this difference between their religious beliefs and medical science and how they would define contraceptive versus an abortion.
Well, these people are also against condoms.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't
semen.
Understand that.
Yeah. Well, and let me just say this. There are people who hold that as, there are institutions which hold those beliefs. I can tell you for a fact that when we look at Catholic women, Latina women, other religious groups, they make their own decisions about when and whether they want to use contraception and when and whether they want to be a parent. And so there's a schism between the teachings of their church and how they actually practice their beliefs. And we find that Catholics overall are high utilizers of contraceptive services. And so it's a schism at the top. But now that schism at the top of the church has now been embedded into the political framework pretty much of the Republican Party. And they've come up with their newest way to restrict access. It sounds like they're trying to increase access. But you'll see they've now said, let's make contraception available over the counter. So no employer or no health plan has to pay for it. Let's put all the burden back on the woman. And by denying women insurance coverage for their contraception, you're now making it unaffordable for women. So they're trying to act like, oh, we love contraception so much we want to put it over the counter. And you could only do that for birth control pills. You can't put an IUD over the counter because a woman can't self-insert. But they're trying to appear as if they're much more moderate than we're making them out to be. But that's a direct attack, particularly on low-income women. We just got coverage of contraception in healthcare in the Affordable Care Act for hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of women are all around America. For the first time, they didn't have to pay the full cost. So for the first time, if they were paying the copays, they didn't have to pay copays. We just won the right for women to have free access to birth control, and now these Republicans want to take it away from them. It's really unconscionable, in my own personal opinion, that we put so many barriers and make it so hard for women to do and make their own decisions about when and whether to be a parent. It's shameful, I think.
It is shameful. We're talking with Kathy Kinnear, sorry, the head of Planned Parenthood in California, running over 100 healthcare centers. Thank you for opening up in West Hollywood, by the way. My daughter lives around the corner in Valley Village. And,
all right, well, tell her to check us out.
Okay. So I do want to, first of all, you're terrific on the radio. I'm very, very happy to have you. I'm extremely intelligent and coherent and articulate. So let's go in now to this horrific, almost unimaginable nightmare with this film that Carly Fiorino seems to have co-produced. I can't even describe it. I'm going to let you describe, please, what has happened with this film that you can name and tell us all about it, please.
Well, let me start at sort of the whole story about these fetal. The way Planned Parenthood participates in offering women in some areas, it's not across the country, it's only in some areas, where we offer them the opportunity for them to donate their fetal tissue for science and medical research. And so I want people to really understand how the program works and why we at Planned Parenthood think it's so important and why we choose to participate in some areas. You know, fetal tissue research dates back to 1954 when the Nobel Prize for Medicine was awarded for the role that fetal kidney cells played in the polio vaccine, the development of the polio vaccine. So this goes back to a long way. The role of tissue, organ donation for medical research really was founded in the late 60s, early 70s, when all 50 states passed what we called the Uniform Anatomical Gift Act, because we recognized that science can and needs to have access to human tissue, human body parts for medical research. In addition, that sort of expanded when we looked at it for transplantation. But human tissue in 1988, they formed a national task force that included people who supported abortion, people who opposed abortion, bioethicists, researchers, and they did a comprehensive look at human fetal tissue in science and should we recommend it to happen or should we say no? It's never morally important. And the conclusion of this august body and their report, looking at all the advantages, the disadvantages, the risks, came to the conclusion that donation of fetal tissue is morally relevant because the tissue comes from fetuses that have already been terminated, that are no longer alive, and the tissue research was being used specifically to advance significant medical goals. And so it was both of those things. They did not want, the bioethicists were very clear, we don't want women to have an abortion so they could donate fetal tissue. We didn't want to incentivize women making decisions about abortion and then saying, my father has Alzheimer's, I want to have a baby so I can, you know, donate the tissue for Alzheimer's research. And so the bioethicists really wanted to make sure that that could never happen, and they separated by a big, bright line the decision to have an abortion and the decision to consent to fetal tissue donation on behalf of the mother, woman. So that report came to that conclusion that they also put in making sure that there was adequate informed consent, both for each procedure individually, and passed the report. But that was during President Reagan, and he made the decision to put that report and all of its findings on hold. But in 1993, President Clinton really moved to end that moratorium. And again, everybody weighed in, everybody re-looked at the report, nothing had really changed. And so June of 1993, Congress passed, and the president signed, the National Institutes of Health Revitalization Act that established the parameters for how fetal tissue research could be conducted and how what regulations needed to be in place to protect the program. And so we've followed those federal rules and guidelines. And it's really important for folks to understand that, as I mentioned, the patient already, where we have a program to participate with valid research researchers or research entities, women who make the decision to terminate a pregnancy and based on the gestation of a pregnancy, we could say we're participating in this national research project. Would you like to donate fetal tissue? Some women are happy to donate and some women aren't. We don't try to pressure them. There's nothing for us to be gained if they donate or don't donate. But the federal rules say that we, as a provider of fetal tissue, we cannot profit from that, but we are allowed to be reimbursed for our cost. And so we have a way of tracking what are our costs to provide just that piece of fetal tissue. And nowadays, we almost always work through these federally recognized tissue banks that have a wide range of tissues. We don't contribute directly our fetal tissue to a researcher except in one or two isolated cases. But we mostly work through these tissue banks that are federally regulated and have to follow all the same rules as we do. So we do that. And it also, there's another rule. So we can't profit, but we can be reimbursed. There's another rule attached to these guidelines that says, we can't say, gee, you're at this gestation, why don't you wait a couple more weeks because we really want to do this. And then we change what we would do. We somehow change what we would do solely for the purpose of the research. And they don't want that to happen. So you basically have to treat the patient and provide the abortion in a manner that meets the medical needs of that patient because different procedures are used for different time periods. So that's the point where, so there's no, you cannot manipulate the procedure solely for the purpose of collecting tissue. The challenge we have in that language is not the challenge we have, but what's easy for people to not understand is that when you start a medical procedure, and this is true not just for abortion, it could be for any procedure, where you start out thinking, well, this is what I'm going to do. But then as you start to do it, you realize, oh, I didn't realize that. I have to change the procedure here, or I have to do this. And there are often adjustments that are made while you're doing the procedure. And so that's where they've tried to throw doubt that we're manipulating these abortions so that we could specifically harvest a heart, a lung, a brain, a liver. So... we've been operating in these programs really since the late 1990s in a few health centers where they are aligned with valid medical research. But then along comes David DeLeiden. And David DeLeiden's an individual who's been, you know, pretty much raised in the anti-choice movement. When he was in college with Lila Rose at UCLA, Lila Rose is fervently pro-life, and I could respect that. But I don't respect that what they try to do is to invade our health centers and manipulate videos to make it appear we're doing something we're not doing. I think that's just plain unethical. I wish it was more illegal, but it's unethical, at least. And they've tried. Lila Rose and her team at UCLA had tried to discredit us twice before. And they really didn't succeed. It never really caught on. People could see through what they were trying to do. Your listeners might remember the Acorn, where Acorn was a national organization dedicated to voter registration and getting out the vote for disenfranchised voters. And they did a similar sting. James O'Keefe was another partner with Lila. he successfully did that and succeeded in having Congress literally wipe out their federal funding overnight. And Acorn, as it was known, was literally ended. And so I think David really wanted to aspire to something that would get us wiped out overnight. And he went off on a quest and met with some of the most anti-choice extremists all around the country for over a year, saying, this is what I want to do. I want to infiltrate Planned Parenthood, and I want to take them down. Help me. What do you recommend? What do I do? How do I do it? And he went all around the country and linked up with all of these anti-choice extremist groups. And they settled on really developing their strategy. They created basically a phony nonprofit, Center for the Medical Progress, and another phony LLC, Biomax. And they want to end fetal tissue research. They also want to end Planned Parenthood. So they felt this would be the way to maybe do both. And so they created these phony corporations. They created phony IDs. They actually used illegal false California driver's license solely for the purpose of infiltrating us and using that and undercover videos to discredit us. And so some of your listeners may have heard about them, seen the videos. I think the first video takes place largely at a restaurant at lunch where our medical director is having lunch and talking to what she thought were colleagues and the way doctors would talk about these things. And they edited the video to edit out where she said, well, wait a minute, we can't make a profit. And they keep trying to say, well, we'll pay you more. We'll do this. And she goes, no, we can't participate. We're not going to make a profit. We only do this if we want to further medical research. But they slice and edit that to make it appear as if, yeah, I'll change procedures. I'll do this. And, yeah, money, no problem. So that video caused a huge uproar. It shocked all of us, everyone who worked at Planned Parenthood, when we watched the video. And we watched them the same time your listeners watched them. We didn't have any advance notice. And it kind of made us pause. But since I'd been exposed to the previous Lila Rose, I go, I know this is not what happened. I know that they've deliberately misled these. And so we had to begin immediately internal investigations looking at, okay, how do we perform where we have these programs? How do we perform procedures? How are we reimbursed? And we did our own internal investigation within the first few days of the first video and came to the conclusion, no, we are following the protocols. We're reimbursed at our cost. Here's how we do it. And we don't follow procedures. And, oh, by the way, these videos have been highly edited and distorted. They released a second video. They've released many combinations of them. But I want to talk a little bit about the Center for Medical Progress, because they're not the Center for Medical Progress. But they really have some interesting characters. So David DeLeiden is the founder of the Center for Medical Progress. And he worked prior to this with Live Action, which is Lila Rose's organization. He's added two other members of CMP. One is Albin Romberg, who's an individual here in California that's been our nemesis and opposed and protested and fought us every inch of the way here in Sacramento, also trying to figure out how to block access to health services for adolescents through ballot initiatives. But he also linked himself to Troy Newman. And Troy Newman is the president of Operation Rescue. It's the pro-life group that ran this multi-decade harassment campaign of Dr. George Tiller of Wichita, and a campaign that ended when Scott Roeder, who was an active member of Operation Rescue, when he murdered Dr. Tiller in his church in 2009. Those are the three main characters in this undercover enterprise that really set out to interfere with our ability to provide services.
These are right-wing extremists.
To be associated with several other individuals who have been part of this anti-choice extremist network. Cheryl Sillinger is the senior policy advisor for Operation Rescue. She served for 2 years in federal prison for planning to bomb an abortion clinic in 1987. She admitted to providing Dr. Tiller's assassin with information. Her name and phone number were found on the dashboard of the killer's vehicle when he was arrested. So, you know, this really has some of the most extremist of anti-choice. They're just extremist. They've also combined
with others. Their purpose is basically to destroy Planned Parenthood.
Yes.
And and they are religious fanatics, and so they produce these videos, and the videos are extremely distorted.
Yes.
I'm not going to watch any of these videos, but of course, Carly Fiorina famously ranted about one in one of the presidential debates, and I assume they're quite grisly and really portray Planned Parenthood in the worst possible light.
Well, you know, what's interesting about her, what she says that she saw on a video never happened. And every organization that has compared what she said and what's in the video have said, Carly, no. When Sean Hannity of Fox News tell you, Carly, it's not on there, and she goes, yes, it is, I saw it. And she is just adamant that she knows what she's seen, and no one's going to dissuade her that it all happened in her head, because it did not happen in the videos. And that's what's really different this time, Harvey. We've never had this level of attack that, one, was coordinated with Congress. They shared their videos and their doctored videos with Republican members of Congress, so that the day the first video was released, they already had their whole Republican attack on Planned Parenthood already mapped out. They knew what they were going to do, how they were going to do it, and their goal, I believe, was to release the videos to tee up a vote on the October 1st budget, because they really wanted us to be defunded by October 1st.
How much money federally does Planned Parenthood get? Do you have any idea?
It's about $350 million. Let me talk about that just for a minute, because the overwhelming majority of that money comes through the Medicaid program, and the Medicaid program works that individuals have Medicaid, which is like insurance coverage, and they can go to the provider of their choice. They're not forced to come to Planned Parenthood. They could go to any other provider who accepts Medicaid. And many private providers do accept Medicaid and do see Medicaid patients. But when patients come to us, whatever service we provide, we bill their insurance, which is the Medicaid program. So they're not defunding us. They're taking away patients' ability to see the provider they want to see. And so, and if we do a bad job, if we do bad care, they don't come back to us. We run like any other health service, and people do have choices.
So
the
this
only
money
direct
does not
money
institutionally,
we get
this, Kathy Kinnear, this money does not go institutionally from the federal government to the offices of Planned Parenthood. This money goes to the equivalency goes for services to individual American citizens who then choose to use Planned Parenthood for those services, and then you're reimbursed by the federal government.
Yes, yes. Now,
so the whole framework of the discussion has been deliberately misleading, because most people would assume that when they're talking about defunding Planned Parenthood, they're talking about taking away money that goes to you institutionally, but that's actually not the case.
Well, and that's, they want it to be the case, but it's not the case now, except the only difference, the only exception to that rule, Harvey, is the federal Title X program, which is a federally funded program established under President Nixon to expand access. And that program acts like grants. And in that program, Planned Parenthood and health centers in different parts of the country do have a grant that from the federal government, and so we do receive, let's say it's a grant for $100,000, $50,000, and then we use that grant money to provide services at no cost to patients. And in that case, the patient would have to come to whoever has those federal grants. But the overwhelming majority of the $350 million comes through the Medicaid program, where patients are electing to come to us as one of many providers in the program. And so when they talk, and they said, well, wait a minute, under the Affordable Care Act, why do we even need Planned Parenthood? You guys should just go away. And you heard that a lot in some of these debates. Again, the way the Affordable Care Act works, there's two ways individuals access services. One, based on your income, you would be eligible for the Medicaid program, the program we've just been talking about, and that's a program that's for the lowest of low-income patients who can pick their provider and is reimbursed with the federal dollars. And the next part of the way you could come to plan to a provider is if you're based on your income, if it's from 135% of what we say federal poverty level up to 400% of federal poverty level, you go into the exchange. And in the exchange, you can buy private insurance based on your income. And the lowest level, you get a higher match, a higher discount. And at the top of 400%, you have to pay full price. But what they don't understand when they make these really asinine arguments that, well, we don't need Planned Parenthood. We have covered California. We have Medicaid. There's no reason. Well, those are insurance programs. Those are how people pay for the services they want. But they still have to find a doctor. And so,
and you provide the doctors. Planned Parenthood provides the actual services. And
yes.
So what these guys are talking about is not paying you.
Right. They don't want us to be available for patients to choose us. And in many areas, yes, there are other licensed community clinics, the federally qualified health centers, and there's more of them, and they're everywhere, but they're not everywhere. We are often in places where we're close to them. We're often in places where there's no one else but us. All they're doing is they want to take away their patients' right to come to us. Well, right now, we see all 800,000 patient visits a year here in California. So if you follow their thinking, they would say, wait a minute, okay, because of Affordable Care Act and Medicaid and covered or exchange, we don't need Planned Parenthood as a health care provider. So if we couldn't serve those 800,000 patients, where are they going to go?
God, that's mind-boggling.
Are there enough excess doctors who don't have their offices filled? Are there enough openings to take these patients and these other federally qualified health centers? And the answer is unequivocally no, they don't. And particularly in California.
So basically then, what they're talking about, these right-wingers, is suspending patients, female patients, who need health care in midair.
Yes.
They want to remove, I assume that Planned Parenthood is by far the largest provider of women's health services in the country. So what they would want to do then is just knock you off the list of providers who could be legitimately paid by Medicare and Medicaid. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
God.
Well, that's their vision of it. And so, fortunately, on the
That shouldn't even be legal.
Well, it's not in the Medicaid program. Congress isn't happy about that because the Obama administration says, no, the Medicaid program is designed to really operate in the private health care. It's supposed to act like insurance, just like other insurance programs, where patients can pick the provider of their choice. And that's really important that these patients can pick the provider of their choice. And so what the Republicans are, and one of the bills they've introduced that hasn't had its hearing yet, is to say, we don't care, doesn't matter, no Planned Parenthood can participate in the provider network for Medicaid. That's what they're trying to propose. And that would leave women, basically, as you said, suspended in air. Yes, I have an insurance card. I just can't get an appointment, or there isn't someone near me. And that's what they're trying to do. And they're trying to say, don't worry, all these other people are in there, you're going to be taken care of. They don't care one bit. about whether women get these services or not. That's the bottom line. Because if they care, they try to understand what the facts are, and instead they're trying to figure out how to confuse the public as to what would this really mean for patients who use Planned Parenthood.
So essentially what they're saying, what they want to do is say, okay, they want to be able to say, okay, we're going to continue to fund female health care, but we're going to make sure that there's nobody to provide it.
Yep. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
And mind-boggling. We're with Kathy Kinnear, terrific guest, Kathy, head of Planned Parenthood in California. We do have a caller. Do you want to say anything else before we take on a caller?
No, I'm happy to try to answer their question.
Okay. Caller, is this Sheila Parks?
Hi, Javi. It is. Hi, Kathy.
Sheila, how are you? Thank you for calling in. We're with Kathy Kinnear of Planned Parenthood. Sheila, I know you very well over the years. You're in Boston. And what did you want to ask of Kathy
Kinnear? I have been listening to the show, and I have a lot of things I would like to say to you. You've been wonderful. Thank you. But I really want to talk about, you talked a lot about the importance of the upcoming presidential election. You talked about the Supreme Court, et cetera. So I grew up in voting rights for 13 years before I now do some other work. But, you know, I wrote an important chapter once. I was doing a lot of research in 212, and I will email it to you. I'll be crashing at the intersection of women's rights and voting rights. Today I would call it the intersectionality of women's rights and voting rights. In 2000, when Bush stole the election from Gore, there was a Republican SOS there, Catherine Harris, and there was a Republican governor there, Jeb Bush. In Ohio, when Bush stole the election from Kerry, there was both a Republican SOS and a Republican governor.
By SOS, Sheila, you mean Secretary of State.
Secretary of State. Kathy, you know that, right? Anyhow.
Yeah.
All right, so in 2010, though, ultra-right-wing Republican governors were elected in Alabama, Arizona, Florida, Maine, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, South Carolina, Texas, and Wisconsin. You probably know that.
Yeah.
And in several of these states, these 10 governors were not even part of a long line of Republican governors. In fact, some of these states, these governors interrupted a very long line of Democratic governors. And so in 2010, which is the last time I looked at this research, the Republican Party took control of a majority of the state legislative bodies, and it's kept on getting worse. And from what I don't want to go, but I thought I had heard that the Senate already just voted to defund Planned Parenthood. This is now. At any rate, so what we need now, the country needs now, is to look not only at the suppression of the vote, but the rigging of the vote by all the electronic voting machines. The Republicans aren't winning. They are rigging the elections. And the women's organizers, Planned Parenthood, Feminist Majority Now, we're going to keep on losing forever. No amount of money is going to do anything until we get rid of these electronic voting machines and the combination of a Republican governor and Secretary of State who easily rig them. So
okay,
I've 13 years working on this, so I would like to, one, talk with you at some other time and email you some information and really talk on the phone, you know, after Harvey's show. I don't mean tonight. But I would like a response from you to what I said.
Absolutely. And what goes parallel with that, Sheila, is, and I couldn't put my hands on it right now. I'll have to look at where I filed it. There was a very interesting article about the role that Karl Rove played and helping elect
yes.
these governors for the purpose of controlling redistricting. To me, this redistricting fight in 2020, we all need to be very focused on that, because the redistricting lines in Texas and in Florida are what are going to keep Republican governors if that's the way they're also suppressing votes.
Kathy, no, I totally agree with you, and Karl Rove's hands are all over every thing of this mess. Yep. And everybody that I know of, and people are always talking about it, even gets into the mainstream media about suppression of the vote, whether it's the long lines, the gerrymandering, the machines malfunctioning, and that's a pretty well accepted fact. And that's never going to stop the rigging of the electronic voting machine. They do all that suppression of the vote, and then they have that ace in the hole, which says, well, it doesn't matter. We can always just rig these elections. I mean, here in Massachusetts, and we're such a blue state, Scott Brown probably rigged that election against Martha Coakley. So I'm asking you not only to look at the suppression of the vote, which I totally, completely, utterly agree with you about. I'm asking you to look at the rigging, the fraud of the electronic voting machines.
Right. Well, you know Dorothy Fadiman, I must admit.
Absolutely.
Must believe, I mean.
And I got to tell you.
She did a video.
I know, I have that video, but I disagree a little bit with Dorothy on that video. I am saying, and I think Kathy agrees with this, that Dorothy only went so far. She said the touch screens and the DREs, that's, you know, that you touch, there has no paper trail, those rig the elections. I am saying that the optical scan ones also rig the elections. And Dorothy didn't touch that. Let me finish, Kathy. In Volusia County, that's what did it, how they really rigged that election against Gore in Volusia County. I have a white paper that I wrote that we distributed to every lawyer, every voting rights lawyer in the state of Massachusetts, so they could not possibly rig this election against Elizabeth when she was running, because we vote on those same voting machines that they were using in Volusia, Florida in 2000. It's very serious.
All right. And let me put something out here. We're in a situation now with Planned Parenthood and with women's rights in general, where we have a Congress, both houses now. And I will tell you definitively, and Kathy, she knows, but I've been working on this election theft issue since 2004, when they tried to deny me my right to vote here in Central Ohio. You have mentioned a number of times, Kathy, in this discussion, that now the Senate and the House have managed to put the terrible anti-women legislation pass it, and the only thing that's saving it is Barack Obama's veto. Now, I assume as we look to the 2016 election that women are going to be assuming that Hillary Clinton is going to be the Democratic nominee, and that she will have a chance to win over Ted Cruz or Jeb Bush or Donald Trump or whoever else the Republicans put up. But the whole thing is dependent on having a pro-choice president. And I will guarantee you right now, and Sue and I have worked on this, we have a Republican governor, a Republican secretary of state here in Ohio. And more than 80% of the votes are going to be cast and counted on electronic voting machines. And there is no way in hell that the Democrats are going to carry Ohio in 2016 if the issue of electronic voting machines and electronic vote registration polls is not dealt with. And very briefly, I don't want to take too much time, but in this last election here in 2015, where the marijuana ballot was the centerpiece of the election, and they were going to legalize pot here, was very controversial with a lot of corporate Michigans involved, but nonetheless, Bob Fitrakis and I, who have written 6 books on this, and I'm here in Central Ohio, I'm a professor, I have a master's degree, he has a law degree and a PhD, and we looked very, very closely at what happened with the election here in 2015. And I will guarantee you that it was stolen. And we know how they did it. But you have it's a two-pronged strategy. First of all, they have the electronic poll books now. You know, no longer in many places do you come in and there's a book where your name is and you write. It's now done electronically. And in Cincinnati, in this election day, suddenly, mysteriously, there was a breakdown in the electronic poll books. People couldn't vote. They delayed the count. All the polls showed the pro-marijuana ballot passing substantially, and it was somehow mysteriously defeated 2-1. I guarantee you that is not how the public voted in Ohio. And on top of that, and I'll let you give it back to you in a second, Ohio is a Democratic state. It voted for Obama both in 2008 and 2012, and in 2012 we elected a liberal Democratic U.S. Senator. But the state house is two-thirds Republican. Very anti-choice. Very anti-environmental.
Yes, I know my affiliate there is always trying to figure out how they can keep the doors open, given. Yeah.
Kathy,
yeah,
in California, way back, Kathy, I can't remember, there was a food issue. Every time there's an initiative up that people want, they go in and rig it, state after state after state.
So Planned Parenthood, Kathy, and I'll turn it back to you. Sheila, it's wonderful you called in. We need to raise this issue. It seems to me the entire future of women's rights, as well as Planned Parenthood, is going to be really on the line in 2016. Now, we're going to assume, of course, that the majority of voters are going to be women. In this country, the majority of women, the majority of voting public has been female since 1920, but we still only have 20 female senators.
Let me say one other thing, too. You know, the rigging always goes in the direction of the right wing, Kathy. There are never, I can't find one upset, quote, that's what they always call it, victory, when a Democrat gets in and not a Republican. I mean, there's something very exciting going on now. In Kentucky, there was just an anti-abortion governor who, quote, upset a Democrat who was not anti-abortion in one of those, quote, upset victories. Now, last I heard, the Secretary of State, who has standing, was asking for a hand count of all those ballots of everybody who had voted. But it's happening now. We're going to lose again in 2016. We're going to lose. You have both Javi and me telling you this, unless the electronic voting machines are looked at.
Kathy Kneel, yeah. Sheila, wonderful that you called. Thank you so much. You can stay on the line, of course, but Kathy, this is your show, and let's see what you got to say.
I'll be quiet and just listen.
Well, no, thank you, Harvey, and I think we've all understand the absolute critical importance and challenge facing us with the election, not just at the presidential, but also in Congress and Senate. And at the end of the day, we've got, from a women's health perspective and a civil rights and a justice issue, we have a lot of work to do, and never before has our vote meant so much to the future of our children and our country. So thank
well,
you
I think
for the opportunity.
The impact of what Sheila's called in to say, and with which I agree, and wouldn't have come up otherwise, is that, Planned Parenthood is one of the most powerful organizations in the country. And, I teach U.S. history. I know a lot about Margaret Sanger and how this all came about, and if we had another hour, we could talk about that. But it's 100 years old as of, pretty much. Its predecessors. This is not a trifling organization here. And I have to say that unless this issue of electronic voting and the veracity of the vote count and of people being allowed to vote in the beginning, it's a two-pronged strategy. We call it strip and flip. You strip the voter rolls, which is being done enormously, and Greg Palast has done tremendous reporting on that, and then you eliminate many, many voters, and then when the votes are counted, actually you can flip the vote electronically. And I don't know how Planned Parenthood will be able to deal with this, but if any organization has a stake in the future of verifiable voting, it's certainly Planned Parenthood.
Yes, it is, Harvey. So let's have another day to talk about it.
Well, you're a terrific guest. You do great radio. Tell us how people can get in touch with Planned Parenthood. We're really down to the end here. And I will have you back, and we'll have Sheila back on, too, to talk about this in greater detail. What is your website? How can people support you? Real quick.
It's PlannedParenthood.org. It should take you to our national website, and you can, from there, find a local Planned Parenthood near you, or just go to your local Planned Parenthood and say, I want to volunteer. How can I help?
PlannedParenthood.org. Kathy Kinnear, thank you so much. We'll have you back.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye.
Oh,